Shop the Sherwin-Williams Super Sale and get 40% off paints and stains September 19th through the 24th. With prices starting at $29.39, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Hello and welcome to the WTF1 podcast with your usual host, myself, Hayden Gullis, and James Coker. We are finally back. It is the USA Grand Prix this week, but we're not going to be diving into that just yet. We're going to be saving that for a podcast that'll be coming out later on in the week. Instead, we've actually had a few decent headlines that have popped up over the last week relating towards Formula One and the motorsport world. And one of my favorite ones from this week, and I'm very mixed feelings, I'm very 50-50 on this, and it is that Formula One for next year, for 2025, they are planning a big one-off event where all the teams will launch their cars and their liveries for the 2025 season, and it will be staged at the O2 in London. You can buy tickets, you can go towards it, but it'll be one event instead of all the cars, you know, just sort of sprinkling all the teams sprinkling their cars across the start of February and the start of the season. So, and I'm very 50-50 about this. I like it, but at the same time, I'm also like, do I kind of like it how it is? I don't know.
I also agree with you. I'm 50-50 on it. I think the one drawback of it is that the car launches are the competition before the competition, and every team is essentially competing to have the most innovative car launch, the coolest car launch, have the best guest, and also everyone starts comparing liveries once those cars trickle out. I will say there's always been a weird thing where most teams try not to schedule their launch event on the same day as another team.
Yeah.
And sometimes there's overlap. But I will say the pro of this is, for the teams at least, is the teams probably don't make money with car launches.
No.
Because it's an event they're hosting. They might have like a sponsor, maybe underwrite the cost of the car launch, but they're essentially inviting investors of the team, friends of the team, brand partners, other guests, but they probably aren't making, it's not a money-making event. If you combine all of the car launches into one big event in an arena or a stadium where fans are buying tickets, it all of a sudden becomes another revenue stream for the teams, right?
Yeah.
But also what it becomes is something even bigger than that. It becomes like Comic-Con for Formula One.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because all Formula One fans are converging into one space. They've had a few months off. They're desperate for any kind of Formula One content at all.
Yeah.
And it's a converging of fans from all walks of life, fans of all different drivers, fans of all different teams. You're going to have people there in costumes. You're going to have people dressed up as their favorite drivers. You're going to have people dressed up as their favorite cars. You're going to have those DRS helmets that we see in Suzuka. It's going to be like TwitchCon, VidCon, Comic-Con, but for F1 fans. And I think it could be a really fun event for the fandom.
I feel like I agree with you, but also London's probably the worst stage for that in a sense of fans dressing up. I feel like as British fans, we're so boring. We just buy a piece of merch and it's just like, there we go, that's done. I've got my clobber. We're all good. Maybe I'll make a flag, you know, make a very creative flag. You know, there's a lot of those out there. But other than that, I don't see, like, when it gets to Britain, like, oh my God, look at all these cool things. Whereas you go to a lot of other countries, of course, Japan especially, where they, you know, proper go for it. I feel like, you know, hosting it in London is going to be a bit more tame. But I imagine if it is successful, it'll be something that will then be like, okay, London's our starting point, and then for 2026 we're going to the US and we're doing it over there, and then 2027 we're doing it over in Asia, or maybe there's a track that's going to be launching, they're joining the calendar, and we're going to go do it in that country as well. So I think if it's successful, we'll definitely move on. The cons for it for me is that February, you know, those first 2-3 weeks, we're starved of Formula One. Nothing's gone on. It's been so dry. We're maybe looking up on Instagram, what are our drivers up to during the off period? And then you get this month of quite a few content pieces drip fed throughout a couple of weeks, whereas you would have just this one big off event instead. So just one day of it, and then that would probably last for maybe a good 2 to 3 days afterwards before everyone's like, right, what are we on to the next thing? However, on top of that, a pro certainly for it would mean that teams like Haas, who just put out a render when they're launching their car, no show and tell, literally it's just a render on social media, there's a car for next season, we'll see you in testing, will now have a place to be. You get to see the drivers, you get to see content with the drivers as well, and I think there's certainly more of a pro for those teams. And it kind of looks back to, because we always talk about it during car launch season, like the good old days, which was, in all fairness, before I really got into Formula One. But you look at like a McLaren launch where they have the Spice Girls on stage launching their car, and you had all of this massive show about it, which, you know, it kind of want us to get back to, instead of sometimes these boring press conferences where most people in the room look like they can't be asked to be there.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I see both sides of it, but I do think for the fans and for the teams, it makes a lot of sense to consolidate it into one big event. And it doesn't have to be like a one day thing. It could be like a weekend that leads up to the car launch. The car launch is like the main event, but you could have driver interviews, team interviews, other sort of brand activations that are around the Formula One space. It reminds me of, if you go to an all-star weekend in the United States for any of the major American sports, you go to Major League Baseball's all-star weekend, or you go to NBA all-star weekend, for instance. NBA all-star weekend has an event called Crossover that happens, that's open for fans the entire all-star weekend. And there's a bunch of events that happen at all-star weekend. And I went for the first time this year for work. Mm-hmm. And what I realized is that all-star weekend isn't necessarily for the players or the teams. It's for the fans, and it's for the brands that partner with all of the teams and that partner with the league. Yep. It's an opportunity for them to celebrate themselves and their partnership with this professional sports organization. And Crossover essentially is just a giant convention center where all the different brands have different activations for fans. And sometimes it's like an interactive thing where, like, you, for instance, for basketball, you shoot hoops or you dunk, or it's like a photo op in like a locker room or a fake press conference or a fake like on the court thing, or they're just giving out free stuff.
Yeah.
Or they're selling stuff. So I think, given how entrepreneurial and capitalist Formula One is as an organization, I think an event in a weekend like this makes a lot of sense for them.
Yeah, I love that. Honestly, I actually really like that. And they did quite a few years ago, and I know they have done it maybe recently, but it's not as much as it used to be. Like F1 Live, where they would go to cities and do like show runs, basically, in the city. That would be such a cool thing to do. So, yes, okay, of course, you wouldn't have the brand new car doing those runs because it needs to go through that testing. There'd be a lot of cars that would potentially, you know, break down during the show run. But, of course, they can put the brand new liveries onto some older models of cars that they have, like they do nowadays anyway. And they take over a city, whatever city it's going to be for that year. So, like I say, 2025 is most likely going to be in London. So take over a part of London where they have part of the city shut off, and we're watching F1 cars, you know, go up and down and do donuts and stuff like that to really show off to the fans. Lots of, like, the fan zone travels with that as well. They have, you know, on race weekends with Formula One. So, as you say, they have opportunities for you to jump on sim rigs, to do pit stop practice, and do all these other things you get to do at race weekends. That'd be really cool. And that would really cement it more of an event that I am then fully sold on and would have no qualms against it to say, oh, is this the right thing to do? You know, do I want to see change? Sure. No, that'd be great. A whole event around it. lots of people would travel in to be there and have fun. Even if you didn't have a ticket for the event, there's a reason for you to go to that area of the city. And I think that could be brilliant. Sure.
Yeah, for sure. And also, you know, you let's say Formula One is considering having a Grand Prix in a new city. Mm-hmm. And they're not sure really what the fan interest is going to be. They're not sure if it's a city that really can sustain having enough fans buy tickets to go to that Grand Prix. Like, this weekend could be sort of the litmus test. Mm-hmm. And you see, okay, how many fans turned up in this city for this fan event? And if it's substantial, substantial turnout, maybe that's a good case for why that city should be able to host a Grand Prix.
Yeah. Or you could also do the driver who wins the driver's championship, it goes to their home country. So it's sort of like a celebration as well. So Max this year wins the title.
So it's just going to be in the Netherlands for the next... Seven years,
we have a championship battle on, okay? UK. But it could be a cool experience. I mean, because I think it would certainly, whilst Max is still in the sport, definitely have to go to Zandvoort for one, because it would be so crazy there. Like, it would be popping off. I think it would do better than it would be in the UK, despite, you know, there being three English drivers. Going to be four next season with Oliver Behrmann coming onto the grid as well. But just,
I mean,
Max,
you say that, but Albon technically is a British driver, even though he
I know. The British media want to hold on to him to say that we have another Brit for you to support, but he races under the Thai flag. But the Netherlands, I think, just from Max alone, and you know the amount of fans that he has over in his home country and also around the world as well, not just in the Netherlands, I think that would be another great place to hold it in Amsterdam, and would be incredible.
Yeah, for sure. Cool. Hopefully this is just the start of a big new fun thing that fans can participate in.
Yeah, hopefully so. And for potential of the car launches and the livery launches, McLaren could maybe have a new look for 2025. They've recently just signed a partnership with T-Mobile as a sponsor for McLaren. Now, I don't know if this is going to be a title sponsor or if this is going to be just a small logo on the side of the overalls, but... McLaren have had a history of being with a mobile phone network before. They did, I believe they were with T-Mobile once before, but of course the one I'm talking about is Vodafone, and the very famous Vodafone McLaren liveries from the late 2000s, early 2010s. And, you know, if they can create another iconic
that
livery
was iconic.
And partnership with T-Mobile, that'd be incredible.
It's interesting. So I want to attribute this correctly. There is a great Formula One account called Paddock Passion that posts all things Formula One. And they did a breakdown of how many corporate partners each team has.
Okay.
And for example, I'll give you, to start off, RB. Visa Cash App RB has 17 partners. Haas has 17 partners. Williams has 21 partners. Kick Sauber has 41. Alpine has 35. Aston Martin has 29. Mercedes has 25. McLaren has 53 official brand partners.
Damn.
Red Bull has 37. Ferrari has 38. But McLaren by far has more brand partners than any other Formula One team.
It's crazy that they have so many as well. They don't have like an official title sponsor that dictates the way that the livery looks. You look at like Mercedes, you know, they have Petronas. Petronas takes up the side pod and you know, it has elements of the Petronas that's woven into the livery that they have. Of course, Ferrari's never going to change. A company's never going to come into Ferrari and say, we really like your car, but we would like it to be green from now on because it matches our brand. That's never going
to
happen.
We would like it to be HP blue.
Yeah, yeah. You know, we all thought that. You know, remember going into the Miami Grand Prix, they
teased it was going to be the we thought it was going to be a nod to the North American racing teams, which had blue liveries back in the 70s, I believe.
Yeah, and then that one off. I think there was one time that Ferrari raced in Formula One in blue and white, and that was because I think it was something to do alongside the government not wanting to fund or be a partnership. I don't know the full story, so I'm not going to go into it too much. But basically, to spite the government or whoever it was that was, they weren't getting along. Red was basically Italian racing red, just like green is British racing green. Back in the day, they used to race as colours. So yeah, Britain would race under green, and Italy would race under red. And in order to sort of like, you know, stick the middle finger up to them, we were like, okay, now we're going to go blue and white for this race or season. But yeah, they would never change. But, you know, McLaren is one of those that is, you know, potentially going to change, could change if the right company came along, of course. But so they do seem to be cementing this papaya color, though, for the team as their brand. And maybe, you know, it's something that might not actually ever change.
I'm just speculating here, but I do think one of the reasons why McLaren has so many more brand partners than some of the other teams is because they don't have a title partner. Mm-hmm. And I assume the asking price for a Formula One team to have a title partner is so much more substantial than just being a regular brand partner. Yeah. But you look at Visa Cash App, RB title partner, Stake Kick. Williams does not have a title partner, but MoneyGram Haas. Yeah. I believe, is Alpine officially BWT Alpine?
Yeah, because it's BWT on the side. And of course, we have a few times a season where they have the pink livery.
Right, and then you have Aston Martin, Aramco. I believe Aramco is their title partner, which is like a Saudi oil conglomerate, which deep pockets. Then you have AMG Petronas, which is a Malaysian oil conglomerate, very deep pockets. And then Ferrari, while they don't have a title partner,
I think I think HP is now a title sponsor.
Oh, you're right. HP is their title partner now. But they also have Puma, Santander, Royal Dutch Shell. And then Oracle is the title partner for Red Bull Racing. Yes. So maybe one of the reasons why McLaren has so many other partners is because they either the title partner is not for sale or they're like, we're going to compensate for that by having more brand sponsors, or their asking price is so big, no brand wants to touch it. I don't know.
It seems to be working for them because maybe they're just like, we're not going to have a title sponsor because we want to stay Papaya Orange. We want this brand and we want to keep this look because it's our identity. Yeah. But how do we make the money? Because obviously we need that big sponsor to make the money like all the other teams are doing. Well, why don't we just sell a lot more smaller spaces on our car? And in doing so, you still earn the same amount of money as having that one big title sponsor and losing those 30 other sponsors. So I think it's working for them and it seems to be good.
Also, going back to the book, The Formula, which came out in the last year, which if anyone listening hasn't read The Formula, it's a wonderful book. You should really read about the history of Formula One. I believe it was Ron Dennis who pioneered carving up the car and selling very specific parts of the car to advertisers. Like, I think Ron Dennis was the first person to do that.
Okay. Yeah, I didn't know that. Because obviously I know sponsors first came into it in, I think, the 60s. Lotus was one of the first ones, a cigarette company. But potentially back then it was just like the one company would buy the whole car.
I think to buy the whole car. I think Ron Dennis was the first one to carve up different parts of the car and be like, okay, we're going to sell the front wing.
Yeah.
We're going to sell the front wing for this much. We're going to sell the left side pod for this, the right side pod for that, this, that, and the third.
Yeah, I think it's really, really smart. But it would be interesting, you know, a papaya magenta kind of blend. Would you say that color scheme would work for a car?
I think they're too similar.
Yeah, I think it would give you too much, like, you know, RB did that Miami sort of livery where those two colors were on the car. They weren't the only two colors on the car, but they were kind of like,
it worked blended. Though. I liked that car.
But it would be sort of like a sort of picturesque sunset, if you know what I mean. The orange and the...
There's already too much color on that McLaren. They were able to pull it off with the Google Chrome logo on the wheels.
Yeah.
So for some reason, that works for me. I don't know where you would put the magenta to make it work. Maybe on the rear wing, maybe on the air box. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe something on the front wing, like the front wing flat part, maybe the side of the rear wing or the back of the rear wing. But I think, honestly, hands down, the best livery McLaren can do at the moment. It was run on Alexander Rossi's car in IndyCar, and they obviously ran it for Singapore. But the white and the papaya, I think, you know, the callback to what the Marlboro McLaren used to look like, but instead of red and white, it's papaya and white. And I think they got that spot on. And it's just such a tragedy that teams were saving so much weight with paint and stripping it off and just being carbon fiber, because I think we have been robbed of some truly great liveries, you know, that pop from chrome. The field. The chrome was cool.
Love to see the chrome,
but
back.
I generally think the white and the papaya one was so much better. Like, it just is iconic.
Is the white and was the MP44 white and red?
Yeah, the MP4/4 yeah was white and red. Yep. It's the iconic, you know, Marlboro McLaren liveries from the past, but instead of the white and red, it was white and orange. But yeah, it was Alexander Rossi's car in IndyCar this year, because obviously you had Pato with the black and orange, Seagal and the various other drivers that drove for them in that other car had the blue and papaya, and then obviously Rossi had the white and papaya, and I think it's just such a great livery.
And MP4/4 Sorry, I mispronounced. My bad. Huh.
Hey, wake up. New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating US Wendy's.
Right, let's move on to some calendar talk. And Korea have recently announced that they want to return to Formula One in 2026. But sadly for me, we said this on the last podcast, one of the tracks I would love to come back is the Yeongnam Circuit. It doesn't look like that's the one that's going to return. Instead, it's going to be another street circuit, another one. But this time near the capital of Seoul. How do you say that? Is it Seoul?
Seoul.
So near the capital of Seoul, going to look for a return in 2026 is what they are aiming for. Another street circuit. Does that excite you, or are we getting too many street circuits?
No, I'm tired of street circuits. Like, same. No more street circuits in Formula One. I want permanent tracks. I want permanent. Like, I want to go to a proper track and see a race.
Yeah, same.
I just like the novelty of a street circuit for me as a fan wore off like very quickly. For whatever reason, I just don't like it. I don't think it's like a great fan experience. I don't think it lends to the best. I don't think it like lends to the best racing. I'm over it. Like that's why I was really bummed when they announced the Spanish Grand Prix was going to leave Barcelona and it was going to be a street circuit in Madrid. I was like, why?
Yeah. If I look at the calendar right now for 2024, we have got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Eight street circuits out of 24, which doesn't seem like a lot.
Street circuits too many.
Yeah.
The only one that you can keep is Monaco.
Oh, you're going to get some hate from that. I don't know if you saw the comments from our removing tracks. The amount of people that get rid of Monaco.
Oh, my God. People got so mad at us for not mentioning Monaco. Yes, Monaco is a bad race, but Monaco will never be off the Formula One calendar. So stop making it a part of the conversation. Yeah.
And it's
always going to be there.
The best qualifying of the year. The best qualifying session of the year is Monaco. And every track should be different. We shouldn't just go to, this track's the best track. Let's just do 24 races here. No, every track is unique in their own way. And Monaco is unique at being really difficult to overtake. But it's more than that. It's about 78 laps of threading the needle over and over again.
Yeah.
And if you make a single mistake, you're out. It's race done. That's what Monaco's all about. And I think because the cars have got too big, it allows the drivers to kind of slack off a little bit. And that's why I think this race was so much boring this year, that Charles Leclerc could, it was about finishing the race in the slowest possible time, really, for Charles Leclerc. He could just hold up Oscar Piastri and there was no way for Piastri to get through as long as he didn't make a mistake. So I think, you know, hopefully the cars get smaller, we get better racing at Monaco once again. But it's always going to remain on the calendar and it has to.
People are angry about the wrong thing. They shouldn't be angry about Monaco being too narrow. They should make the car smaller again and keep Monaco. Like, also, even if all of the fans wanted Monaco gone, Monaco will never be gone. All the drivers live there.
Yeah.
The brands love being there. Mm-hmm. Formula One loves being there. I know the fee that Monaco pays to have a Grand Prix there is like such a tiny fraction of what all of the other circuits pay. And then I know, I think Monza also pays like a very small fee compared to the other tracks. Like, Monza and Monaco are never going to go off the calendar, ever. Yeah. Full stop.
And then you'd also lose one part of the Triple Crown. Like, what's the other part of the Triple Crown going to be now? You know, the Madrid Grand Prix is part of the Triple Crown instead. No, like, it's got to stay. There's so much history about it, and it's always going to stay. But if I go through the street circuits on the season, Saudi Arabia
was
boring.
It's going to be, to add to the Triple Crown, is going to be the 24-hour of Le Mans.
Of Le Mans?
Yeah. You know the 24-hour of Le Mans?
Yeah.
So you're familiar with it.
Picking lemons for 24 hours, right?
No!
Oh.
Do you not know what the 24-hour of Le Mans is?
No.
It's a race that happens in the States, and they now tour it around the States a little bit, but it's like the 24-hour of Le Mans, but it's shitty cars.
Okay.
Like you can't spend more than like $500 on the car.
I want to do that.
So like, you should do it. We should put together a 24-hour of Le Mans team. So it's people doing a 24-hour race, but they're just driving like pieces of junk. They're not race cars. It. They're like 15-year-old sedans. So that's what they should add to the Triple Crown if Monaco gets taken off the F1 calendar.
The most prestigious award just got less prestigious. So the calendar, if we look at those street circuits, Saudi Arabia, boring race this year, I think. I don't remember anything that happened in Saudi Arabia. Australia, other than Max having that brake issue, nothing happened in that race, was also boring. Miami, Lando Norris managed to not be picked up by the safety car and then got into the
race. If it wasn't the fact that Lando Norris was about to win his first race, I think people would have thought it was a boring race.
Yeah, but I think the same for Australia, for Carlos Sainz winning Australia. People hype up Australia, but it was like, was it really that good, or was it just, you know, finally someone else has won other than Max Verstappen?
Right.
But yeah, you're right. Miami, I don't think anything happened apart from Lando winning. Monaco, boring. Yeah, it was boring. Mm-hmm. I'll agree with that one. Canada was exciting, I think. I feel like Canada was exciting. Yeah. You know, we had a bit of mixed conditions, and there was a fight at the front between four different drivers at one point.
I like the Canadian Grand Prix. Mm-hmm. I really want to go to Montreal.
Yeah.
I think I might want to go to Montreal more than I want to go to any of the American races.
Okay.
Yeah.
Fair. I mean, I like Canada, and I think it's another one of those tracks that, unfortunately, with the cars getting bigger, the racing's got worse. I think you go back to smaller cars and the racing will get better again. But was an enjoyable race this year. Singapore, boring. Like, that was such a boring race. And then Azerbaijan was exciting. Was an exciting race with two cars very, very close fighting at the front. So
that was a good race, and I expected it to be a stinker, and it was really, really good.
Same. So out of seven street circuits we've had this season, two of them have been good. Just goes to show that I don't think that street circuits, whilst I like street circuits and we should definitely have street circuits on the calendar, we shouldn't be replacing proper circuits for street circuits.
I just also think the fan experience at a street circuit isn't as good.
Yeah.
I think with the exception of Singapore that you talked about, how you can easily get around the city and see the race from different parts of the track because their public transportation is so good. I imagine in a lot of the other street circuits, you know, you're sort of sequestered to whatever zone you bought tickets for, and there's no grounds to wander around and explore.
You have to get a grandstand ticket, surely. I've never been to a street circuit to watch, but surely you have to get a grandstand ticket. You can't just, like Hungary, for example, has some great elevation that you can watch 80% of the circuit from general admission, and you're just sitting on a grass bank. I sat at Vail down at Silverstone, and we had a good view, you know, but we were just sat on chairs on the grass. Got rained on, but, you know, it was enjoyable, and we enjoyed the experience of being there. And I think you just lose that with a street circuit, because where else are you going to go other than a grandstand?
Agreed.
But two other tracks that also want to return, Germany and Turkey, which I would say is Istanbul, which we went to in 2020 and 2021, and then, of course, 2011 prior. And then, obviously, Germany could either be Nürburgring or Hockenheim, which I hope and pray is Hockenheim, because I love that circuit, which I think would be much better options of tracks return. But also, on top of that, the FIA have now also come out and said that they could not support a 25-race calendar. And to go into this, this is about the team that the FIA currently bring to the circuit is one team. If they would like, if F1 want to have more circuits, then FIA would have to split up and create two teams and then rotate, because it would just be too grueling for a 25 race season.
I mean, I don't know how they currently support a 24 race calendar.
Yeah, same.
It's too many. I've said this before and I'll say it again. F1 season should be 18 races. That's the most. Like, it could be even less, but I feel like 18 races feels like the right amount to me.
Yeah.
It's too much for the drivers, too much for the teams. I even feel like it's too much for the fans. I feel like towards the end of the season, fans get like sort of tired of it. I mean, this season is an exception because this has been an exceptional season. But I feel like towards the end of last season, I was like, I'm kind of ready for this year to be done.
Yeah. Yeah, I feel like Formula One, we're lucky with the season that we've had an exciting one. But yeah, you look at seasons over the past and, you know, quite a lot of them have been where one driver is dominated or one team's dominated and it's been on the rather duller side. And to have 24 right. races of that, you're like, kind of getting to the end of it now. I fully agree with you. 18, I would maybe push to 19, but that's only because that's what I've had for the majority of when I started to get into Formula One was around the 19 place. But I think that's the maximum. But 18 still, you know, really, really happy with that one. And of course, we did that on the last podcast where we would remove tracks and potentially add them. And yes, there's a lot of amazing circuits out there that we would love to
people
race at.
People hated our takes.
When don't they?
They hated our takes on what Grand Prix to remove from the calendar. Someone was like, oh man, this podcast has fallen off so hard. And I replied, yeah, I know, these hosts are terrible.
I feel like that just goes to show that whilst there's circuits that we're like, these are stinkers, how can anyone like them? Every circuit has a fan base. Every circuit is someone's favorite. Like, some people look at some of my circuits, like Valencia Street Circuit. I absolutely love that circuit. I had so much fun playing on the game. Whenever I say that to people, they're like, are you high, mate? Like, are you right? That is one of the worst circuits. It's had such boring racing apart from one year. And so I totally get it. I totally get that some circuits are going to be some people's favorites. And also, you know, that could be their only circuit that they have in Formula One and the only chance they would have of Formula One going to their country. But if it doesn't create good racing, then, you know, maybe it's got to be taken off the calendar. And if you want to enjoy it, F1 Game can go slap it on there as a historic track DLC. And we can enjoy it.
You know
what
we need? We need a Grand Prix on the moon.
We do. I mean, it should be coming. I'm suspecting maybe 2030. And then they'll be looking to expand that to maybe 2037, I think, is the Martian Grand Prix. We'll be heading there. So,
let's do it. They'll have to figure out the whole gravity thing.
Yeah, but we'll sort that out. I mean, you know, it could.
How do you deal with racing a Formula One car on a place with less gravity? Do you just add more downforce to the car?
That's a great question. That is a great question. We're gonna look so stupid here, but I like it. I'm gonna say yes, but then,
or do you weight it? Just make the car heavier?
I suppose downforce would all depend on how much air is on that planet. And I don't think the moon's got any air, right? It's just a rock. So therefore, I think downforce would be irrelevant. But I might be completely wrong and people will be laughing at me like, look at this bozo thinking he's smart and he knows scientist stuff. I don't think there's any air on the moon. So I think that it wouldn't work. But maybe on Mars, depends on how dense the air is, maybe.
How heavy does a Formula One car have to be for it to sit on the moon and not float away? That's what I want to know.
I feel like only a couple of grams, right? I don't think it's not like they're filled with helium. They're just going to float off away, right?
They could. I don't know.
Lewis Hamilton lights out, away we go. And he just like straight lines off the planet into the stratosphere.
Straight into the sun. Also, what kind of tires does Pirelli have to develop for the moon?
Like ones with big suckers, and they just throw the suckers out. So it's just like it's launched, it's sucked onto the planet, and then it pulls you in. And it's like,
oh, just a bunch of suction cups.
Yeah. I feel like that's what it'd be. It'd be the worst noise you've ever heard in motor racing. Instead of the engine, you could just hear.
That sounds terrible.
But yeah, we can look forward to that when did I say 2030. So it's going to be great. Buy your oxygen packs now because you're going to need it.
If you buy GA passes for the Moon Grand Prix, you do not get access to oxygen. You might die.
Yes, yes. You need to bring your own helmet, your own oxygen packs. Also, you need your own shuttle to get there. There's no petrol stations over there, so you better have packed enough for a return journey, or you might be stuck.
Yeah, if you buy a GA pass to the Moon Grand Prix, you're on your own. It's BYOT, bring your own transportation.
That'll be our challenge in 2030. We'll do rock, paper, scissors for who gets the grandstand and who gets the GA ticket. And we'll show the experience of what it's like.
So dystopian.
Right, last little bit of news then in Formula One that we've seen coming out this week. And this is Mr. Binotto saying that Mick Schumacher is in contention for the Sauber seat for 2025. A lot of us speculating were thinking it's either going to be Valtteri Bottas that stays, Bortoletto's having an amazing F2 season, potentially he's going to get a seat, or maybe Franco Colapinto, who's really shining in his debut in Formula One. But Binotto's coming out and saying, you know, he's worked with Schumacher before when Schumacher was in the Ferrari Academy and he was in charge of Ferrari. But also, you've got that German link with Audi coming in, and obviously Binotto's in that team to get that team ready for Audi. And there's always been speculation that, you know, Audi wants a German driver. They have that, of course, in Nico Hülkenberg, but he's an older, experienced German driver. And potentially Audi want a full star-studded German lineup. You know, we need to really sell this over in Germany. What better than having Mick Schumacher, who comes with an incredible name that's really going to get the German fans behind it, because obviously, you know, he's got that history of his father, of course, that those casual fans that might not know anything about who Mick Schumacher is will hear the Schumacher name and be like, oh yeah, I remember that from when I was a child, when I was a middle-aged man, and they were all talking about Formula One in Germany. So I think it's not potentially a bad move. Of course, you would hope that then also that Mick Schumacher would come with some talent on track, which of course he does come with. And Binotto, working with him before, potentially understands that and has seen the potential that Mick Schumacher can provide through the junior categories that he's watched him when he was developing.
I'm surprised that a manufacturer wants two drivers from the same country. And also, I was surprised to see, especially with the conversations and the rumors that we've seen, that Mick Schumacher was back in the conversation. Mm-hmm. I would love for Mick Schumacher to get another opportunity in Formula One. I just was very surprised that he was being considered, given that Sauber/Audi have some really good options right now.
Yeah.
In either keeping Bottas or signing someone like Bortoletto or signing someone like Colapinto, who is showing everybody that he is good enough to be competitive in Formula One. But yeah, I'd love to see it. I just don't know. I feel like you and I always think we have a handle on what's going to happen, and then we're just always totally wrong.
Yeah, something comes out the next week and it's like, boom, this is happening or this is happening. I think for Mick Schumacher, unfortunately, what he doesn't have on his side is recency bias. You know, he's last race in Formula One in 22, and he's a reserve driver for Mercedes. And I don't think there's anybody who's ever gone, oh, that guy's a really good reserve driver. He's doing an amazing job at reserving for that team. Whereas you would look at a Bortoletto that's constantly being talked about in Formula Two, you know, challenging for the F2 title, putting out some incredible performances. Monza, for example, where he came from the back of the field and won. And then got in the points as well in the sprint race. Franco Colapinto, who's currently, you know, two races into his Formula One career, and everyone's talking about how good he's doing. So It just makes that so much more difficult. And then, of course, you've got Valtteri Bottas, who's already, you know, within that team at the moment. So those inside the team already know how he works and would be like, okay, this is a good experienced driver who would help us get ready for when Audi then takes over, that we can potentially then look towards younger drivers. So I think, sadly for Mick Schumacher, he doesn't have that on his side, and it could be a massive hindrance for him. But of course, as we really, really know on this podcast, yeah, we got to just wait and see how it plays out, because there's a high chance we're definitely wrong.
Yeah, whatever we guess, we're probably wrong. It's going to be a driver that we're not even talking about. It's going to be like Pascal Wehrlein.
Pascal Wehrlein returns, another German driver.
That's right.
But he drives for Porsche, doesn't he?
He drives for Tag Heuer Porsche.
Yeah. So that would be a sneaky
eventually,
steal as
they
well.
Are owned by the same company, though.
Are they?
Yes. Well, Porsche and Audi have two separate motorsport divisions, but they are owned by the same company.
Because you wouldn't really think that. Volkswagen, because they always fight against each other, don't they? They're always rivals.
Historically, they have a rivalry, but I believe Volkswagen owns both Porsche and Audi, but have allowed them to have two separate and two separate and independently run motorsport divisions.
So they used to be
Volkswagen owns both of them.
Okay, so they used to be big titans with swords and shields in their hands fighting against each other, and now they're just two little boy brothers scrapping for their favorite toy while their parents Volkswagen's like, "Calm down, children." All right?
Yes.
You go over there the naughty step, you over there the naughty step.
And their parent is a Jetta. A Volkswagen Jetta.
That is all for this podcast on the WTF1 podcast channel. We are going to have another podcast later on in the week to talk everything about the USGP. So don't worry, we haven't forgotten. We know it's coming, but we'll have another podcast talking all about that. Our preview, our thoughts, who's going to win, who's going to be on the podium, who's going to have the biggest stinker. You'll find out all of that later on. So to make sure you do not miss that episode, make sure you hit that follow button on whatever audio platform you're currently listening to at the moment. Follow the WTF1 official social channels as well to be kept up to date with everything. And of course, if you fancy it, check out myself and James Coker's socials if you fancy a bit of laugh and want to be entertained over there too. James is very, very funny, so make sure you check out his socials, of course.
You're very
and
kind.
You deserve it. And we will see you later on the week for another podcast. Until then, have a good rest of your day. Bye-bye.
Bye.